Okay. Hi, everyone. Can we hear? Is that right? Good? Okay. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming, especially because the sun has come out at last. Woo! Quick housekeeping note. I've been asked just to say, can you switch your ringers off? That sounds really, really dirty, but anyway. My name is Mel Exon. I'm the co-founder of BBH Labs, the innovation unit of BBH, which is a creative agency. I was going to introduce you to Tom Uglow at this moment, but I'm really sorry to say that he's being struck down by some kind of food poisoning. We think he ate a dodgy beef taco by mistake. We're not sure. So instead, the wonderful Jeremy Ettinghausen has stepped into the breach.
So Mel basically put a call out asking for somebody who could read, and she got me. And I'm like William Hurt in broadcast news, you know. My mouth's moving, sounds coming out, but then there might be a bit of lack of comprehension behind the eyes, so just work with me on this.
Okay, so let's start by stating the obvious, a bit of a disclaimer, if you will. We're not really here to talk about Skynet and Mad Max. They're both fictional films. I love them both, for what it's worth. Each set after an apocalyptic event. We did think about trying to retitle this talk, How an Apocalypse Might Affect Your Business, but we settled for this disclaimer instead. They really are just an analogy. We are all storytellers here. This is what we've done and what humans do generally. We tell stories to affect results. And in this case, both films paint, if you like, an insanely dystopian and radically different view of the future, yet they're also really classic narratives. Control versus chaos. A closed network versus an open network. A totalitarian state versus total anarchy.
And this is actually one of the oldest stories on the planet. And these extremes feel biblical. You have to go with us on this. In the left corner, we have Skynet. It's an omnipotent, non-human entity that becomes so powerful and self-aware, it decides that mankind needs to be wiped out. So it becomes a vengeful and fearsome divinity in the process. It's Noah and the Flood, Skynet style. Skynet is an atheist version of the Old Testament God, terrifying, omniscient, totally merciless.
And then in the right corner we have Mad Max. Total absence in these films of much moral or cultural direction. They show a society that's completely broken down, a society where the perpetrators are cast out and forced to scavenge for themselves in a lawless, nameless, free, open, and naked state. No, it's not the Garden of Eden. It's the Thunderdome. And thank you to Gabor for the gifts, by the way. They rock. Don't you think the gifts are pretty?
We see these extremes again and again and again in conventional storytelling. There are many scenarios of the authoritarian state. I said Mel found someone who could read, but barely. In literature and film, there are many future scenarios of authoritarian dictatorships. Terminator is just one. There's 1984, Brave New World, Metropolis, Blade Runner, Minority Report, Matrix, Ghost in the World, even Wall-E. There are a similar large number of films and books that relate to the anarchic state. Uncontrolled, free, libertarian, dirty, degraded, violent, sometimes even sexually explicit. We've got Clockwork Orange, Battle Royale, Children of Men, Brazil, Escape from LA, 12 Monkeys, just to name a few of them.
So a conversation about religious symbolism, literature and film might not feel that appropriate given we're here really just to talk about technology, people and brands. But it's kind of important that we do frame this discussion. It is simply an exercise, if you like, in classic storytelling, cliché, dystopian dramas that we love. And I'm going to give the game away here a little bit, when we all really know that real life is a lot more MOR, or middle of the road. So kind of why are we bothering? Well, we believe that we use extreme narratives like the things Jeremy's just been talking about in the films and literature we've seen, to help us define, actually, the parameters of our society. They're not actually these films. They're not actually signposts into the future, at least I damn well hope they're not. In fact, they're the opposite. They're more like guardrails. So in reality, of course, chaos ain't that popular, and neither is slavery. But very few people, we believe, don't like to know where the boundaries actually are. And so it did strike us that there were a couple of parallels with technology and where it's going. And given the impact technology is having both on our daily lives and on brands, we thought we might learn something by examining the extremes. So, just as we've described a sliding scale between chaos and control in those films, anarchy and fascism even, atheism and religion, I think Jeremy got a bit biblical earlier. Of course, these days it's also about web versus native, even HTML5 versus Flash. In other words, open versus closed. So we're going to shift gears now, take a quick look at the impact technology pushed into two deliberate extremes could have, because again, we hope we'll learn something. And just for fun, Jeremy is going to be cheerleader for Skynet, the closed visionary power, and I'm going to be the flag waver for Mad Max, aka open source genius. Just so you know, Mad Max is definitely going to win. We reserve the right to be insanely upbeat and cynical and rude to one another in equal measure. Over to you.
And
There
is a voting mechanic, and it is available on that URL. There is a phone app, mobile app, that I believe works on phones, tablets of a variety of brands. So we want you to help us decide whether technology is more likely to drive us towards an authoritarian state or towards an anarchic diaspora, and which of these might be, I guess, preferable. So let's go. We've got three lenses to look through, the two extremes. Mel and I are going to take it in turns to try and win your vote. These are big topics. I hope we do them a tiny bit of justice, but I don't think we are going to delve and solve all of these big issues. The future I want to paint for you is one that's envisaged by technologists, the dream of technologists, where the convergence of devices, operating platforms, processing speeds allows huge data to immerse us, for our lives to be silently augmented, each data detail predicted, analysed, recorded for our benefit, without us needing to worry about anything at all. It's very similar to what's already happening, in fact, in onboard computers in high-end cars. Right now, all you need to do is drive, and very soon, if Google's engineers have their way, you won't even need to do that. The environment is perfectly managed for you. And the alternative future that Mel's going to try and sell you is the home of competition and open platforms fighting for your interest. And it's messy, and it's ugly, and it's frankly dirty and unsanitary. And you would be very well advised to both vote against it and steer away from it. So we're going to start with the future of identity, which is about authentication and trust. And in our perfect, seamless future, identity has evolved. It's a singular function at a global level. You are who you are because you can sign in. That simple. And in this converged, well-managed world, this works brilliantly because it's a unified layer that sits across all other functions. The company, and I'm going to refer to the company throughout this talk. We could call the company the man, but right now we're calling it the company. Guarantees your identity, much like a credit card company does today. It watches your logins, sells maybe certain user information if that's useful to you. It looks for fraudulent activity. It manages a personal relationship with you to ensure your login remains secure. It works with every interface you come across. It makes you authentic. And when you're authentic, you can do anything. You're all-powerful. It means if you've got credit, you can buy stuff simply by being logged in. It means you can get visas and travel. You can interact online and offline as the same entity. You receive offers and deals in real time at point of sale or at point of search. All that stuff that everyone here in South by Southwest is offering you if you just tweet with a certain hashtag or sign up for their service. All of that functionality, no login, no phone, just you. Authenticity combined with geolocation will do everything. You can pay for cabs, you can pay for Cokes and coffees. I don't need to carry cards or a phone. I can create preferences which set the amount I can spend in particular locations. It's very similar the way that a bar that knows me offers me the opportunity to run a tab or extends me credit. Cookies today suggest news that we might like. Imagine, though, cookies for reality. Wherever you go, the cookies understand your preferences, your club card status, your preferred music and mood lighting. They'll understand fraud as well. Hey, they'll say, Jeremy doesn't walk that way normally. Let's let someone know. There are obviously logistic technicalities, but these are just engineering challenges to overcome. Whether they're biometric, visual, or logic-based, the guaranteed identity means that theft is impossible. Muggings and burglaries will disappear. Finance is controlled by the cloud. Foreign exchange is transformed. Credit and fraud are controlled. Micropayments become normalised and instantaneous. You can wink a $5 tip to somebody, or a $10 tip if you've had particularly good service. And anonymised purchases can be done by cash transactions, which have a no-follow tag that captures no data about the exchange whatsoever. In this authentic state, you've got a signed-in default, and that ensures your virtual data is also synced and cross-referenced. Your time's organised, maps are planned, searches are preempted, music scheduled, flights arranged, offers accepted, bills paid, entertainment choices suggested across each media device in your daily life. It's like having a PA that doesn't sleep and isn't distractingly pretty. When you wake up, the world just works around you. Just works is the phrase. And brands will just work around you also. This is the, I don't know if you've seen, this is the vending machine that dispenses ice cream when you smile at it. So in order for brands to operate, they need to offer a fair exchange for data. At the moment, that means they buy ad space in users' eye line, or they pay for content with intrusive media, or offer something. But increasingly, brands will work within the parameters of user-first marketing. They'll make sure that whatever the brand wants to tell the story around is providing something the user wants. Entertainment, reward, opportunity, excitement, peace and quiet, perhaps. There'll be a world of marketing that's personalised to your needs and is desired by the user. We see the start of this already. YouTube's click-through ad format, where if you don't like the ad, you just skip it. And if your preference is to block all ads, probably meaning that you've paid to block all ads, then why shouldn't you live in an ad-free world? Tell me that, Mel.
So that's all very well, but do we really want to be yoked to technology that sounds like it controls us more than we control it? This is what Jeremy's future sounds like to me. Basically, opt in or just get out of town.
Very
vulgar.
For
anyone,
very vulgar.
Sorry if this is, I need to reference this for anyone who's not English or not seen the thick of it. This guy is a spin doctor in a very, very funny political satire show in the UK called The Thick of It. He's called Malcolm Tucker, and he's, as I say, a spin doctor in the show. He does not take no for an answer, ever. Yeah, stop taking the photograph, because I really don't think that should arrive in the World Wide Web. But anyway, not with my name on it anyway. Seriously, though, the problem with what Jeremy is saying is that no one can exist outside of the system he's describing. Great. Therefore, radical or minority interests can be marginalized, movements tracked, and freedom of speech monitored to within an inch of its life. From the beginning of time, ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy... We fought to free ourselves from subjugation and control. What Jeremy dismisses as anarchy, the rest of us call freedom. And what could be more appropriate as we sit here in the US of A? I may be British, but I like freedom too, with fries on the side. Freedom of speech, the right to free assembly, freedom of belief, freedom of choice. This stuff dates back centuries and is enshrined in the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Human Rights, you name it. Now, okay, I'm obviously sounding a little bit overdramatic. But in seriousness, our failure to protect choice, consumer choice, and the structures of freedom, well, they're hardwired to the origin myths of the World Wide Web. And to lose them, it's a matter of scandal, Jeremy. Instead, I'm going to paint a picture of a world not dissimilar from our own on the surface, a world where companies and brands fight for your attention. Yep, they scrap for each dollar. And that is what moves not only the economy forward, but drives technological development itself. Around every corner is a garage startup with an epoch-marking technological development. It's open-sourced, it's forked, it's crowdfunded. The speed with which technology moves can only be hindered by Jeremy's lumbering closed garden solutions, hoovering up the data and credit of a global market eager for innovation. So, let's start with an undeniable advantage of the open web, the revival of community and individualism. The markets would like the outliers, like me, Jeremy, to be the few, and indeed the majority in their graphs to be a 99% majority. Converged systems do push us towards that, towards a closed, blinkered understanding of our world. In the open, multiple sign-ins to different online communities will work across all forms of media and the web. Usually at this point, walled garden devotees panic about proving identity, talk of anonymous trolls, and the like. And yet identity, ladies and gentlemen, is not about a name any more than a brand is just a logo. The NIM Wars set out to prove that the internet allows for individuals to live truly fractured, multifaceted, multi-personality lives, and that's fine. Locking people into the true identity provided by their social security number is, I would wager, an old world relic that only an open web can truly challenge. As Christopher Poole says, there is not one you. In fact, as he put it rather beautifully last year, people aren't mirrors that display one reflection. They're multifaceted, like diamonds. So sure, with open access, signing in shares, a lot of data, meaning a huge level of trust is required by the community. But funnily enough, that's just the way it is in real life. Newbies to a community, you move into town, you get watched. Curtains twitch. You know, and if you bring value, you're accepted. And if you behave badly, you get hounded out of town. We will, as people, as communities, as a society, work this stuff out. The human web will be increasingly essential in creating non-corporate forms of trusted identity through community. Think peer review, networks of individuals vouching for each other like PageRank. Imagine Quora and Wikipedia, but faster, better, harder and stronger in future. So, what role for business and brands here? In a digital world, with a universally open approach, when you find something that you as a user want to own, everyone in the world bids for you to buy their version. Yeah, I know that sounds a little insane, but go with me for a minute. Streams of data such as face recognition data are shared as a matter of public record to prevent organizations exploiting it. So where cameras recognize you, there is an open auction then to present advertising. And that advertising may appear on media surfaces like billboards, on your clothing, or just in your eyeline. But if it's not going to be immediately blocked, it's got to be user-focused. It's got to be valuable to those people. Now, while that may make going online sound like the virtual equivalent of walking into a Moroccan bazaar, this is a kind of film that was created by a filmmaker called Keiichi Matsuda, which is a pretty overwhelming thing to witness. And that is fair enough. It's the virtual equivalent of walking into a Moroccan bazaar. In an open web world, though, it's always going to be possible to add a further digital middleman. There's absolutely infinite space for them. And in fact, PayPal and Wallet actually are already examples of this. And in a truly Mad Max future predicated on free and open access, new developers would be able to build on that to make the experience of using either of these products actually less painful. And I'd be happy to pay a 0.1% surcharge if they did, personally. And in an open world, it's worth saying, too, that you can still employ an intelligent ad blocker to wipe the stuff you just don't want to see out of your vision. Think of it as a bodyguard for your eyes. The ad blocker may even go a step further and replace an offending ad with something or someone you want to see instead. And Jeremy always thinks that's a dirty joke, but actually it's me, in my case, an excuse to just proudly put up a picture of one of my daughters in a blatant attempt to get your vote.
It's not working.
Is it not working?
Not working.
Damn. Come on, people, stop voting. Okay, so another opportunity that multiple or pseudonym-based sign-in offers is the fact that a whole host of activities can be handed off to non-human entities. Is Luke here? Is he here, Luke Mason? Oh, yay. Hey, Luke. Okay, so Luke's here from Weavers. These actually already exist. Weavers are bots that use web APIs to find and remix social data, effectively becoming the digital alter egos or research agents of their creators. They can follow the topics you want found. You can program them with your own preferences and personality or something completely more akin to an alter ego, you decide. And then you can drop one into a city you're thinking of moving to. just one use case, to see which quarter of the city would suit you, which quarter of the city you'd like to live in. Another example from India here, we've got social bots like this one that updates your various social feeds with seamless sharing, or even imagine death bots that serve social notices for the ultimate out-of-office correspondence. Either way, it's a perk, or maybe just a quirk, of the open web that a deregulated system has more solutions to more problems and evolves faster and in more directions than closed systems. Messier, maybe, sure, but we move forward faster. We are more innovative in an open web world.
Well, that's all very good, all well and good. What you said earlier, I think, struck a chord with me. You talked about the converged systems pushing us towards a closed, blinkered understanding of the world. I think the key thing here is the understanding. At least there will be an understanding of the world.
We're neck and neck, guys. Come on, open web, start voting.
In the converged identity system. I'm no scientist, but I think we should at this point discuss quickly the future of the human body. And this is well covered by science fiction, more so by science fact. And we've all seen stories of how we'll live to be 1,000, we'll have bionic limbs, digital eyes, homegrown organs. I want eyes in the back of my head, frankly, and recordable memories that can capture everything that we do, see, or hear. What about our own bodies? Since we've discharged with keys, devices, cards, and phones, we need to resolve some practical issues. We already have micro-thin, transparent, conductive materials like graphene, and we can expect our technology to get smaller, lighter, and faster. So we'll obviously need a few things. We'll need embedded GPS. We'll need 4G wireless speakers, almost certainly memory. So we're going to have cochlear implants. That's inevitable. Sensors to inform us about our environment. All things from air quality to sun strength. A camera, I think, is pretty essential. And there does seem to be a surprising amount of space between the eyeball and the skull. So I think they can probably fit something, I don't know, with a pretty decent lens in there. The human body has plenty of physical capacity for light augmentation. We do it all the time. Just curious that currently it's for cosmetic purposes or ornamentation alone. The future of visual display seems less obvious. Will we have LEDs planted in contact lenses, actual corneal implants, head-up displays, or just a mass of lightweight wearable plastic that operates just as well? Will projection advance to a level we can get the quality we want without burning anyone that gets in the way? This obviously has implications for gaming, and in this world, it's reality-based. It's very hard to distinguish from current forms of entertainment. Narrative streams cross, the arts become increasingly immersive and interactive. Game culture, combined with gesture and face recognition, infiltrates theatre, art, dance, and old world broadcast media like television. A good version of this today would be Chromarama, which is a game that's played on the London Underground system, where your movements are tracked as you swipe the cards we use on and off. Missions are undertaken and points are awarded in Chromarama. I think there's a very real possibility that in the future there'll be something called isolation arts, where you log off and go and sit in if you can imagine such a thing, an unwired location to watch physical drama with no augmentation. I think that'll be a niche thing. I can think we can think of it as maybe like a 22nd century version of poetry. I think that's something to look forward to.
Outrageous. I love poetry for what it's worth. Okay, I've got to say, what Jeremy's describing sounds to me like surveillance society. In order to know that it isn't being used inappropriately, each machine effectively spies on its user's behavior and passes back information. And access to this information is just as hackable as the machine itself, especially by the government or the authority that issues it. Anyway, enough about slagging off what Jeremy said, and back to the case in hand. Just ignoring for a moment all manner of humanitarian issues that genuinely face us today, in future, one of the most pressing issues and most valuable commodities will be access to data. Data is essential to business and it's essential to our lives. So it shouldn't be a surprise to hear in my open world that certain data streams are going to be declared of global interest and unownable, truly open, geolocation being one. And any business can get access to that geolocation, your geolocation, because otherwise, how are they going to be able to provide the information that you need to navigate your environment? What's more, in an open web world, we can look forward to all knowledge, every bit of writing, music, photography, and painting, past and present, being digitized and recorded in a machine-readable way, and importantly, accessible to all. This image here is actually an interface called GIL Universal, which the Georgia State University are using to digitally catalog their library. I just think it's beautiful, but it's also extremely useful. And just think of something like this, but taken a step further. A universal library, if you like, for everything, not just books. What Kevin Kelly calls Memorex, in fact. And in terms of the human augmentation bodies that Jeremy talks about, surely the free market and open source should be in the driving seat here. Currently, we accept cosmetic surgery and also increasingly prosthetic bionics. But once we begin to engineer our own genome and are able to alter, go with me for a while, our athletic, artistic, and academic performance, well, that's a whole new ball game. And this stuff needs to be kept accessible to all. In fact, when that happens, it strikes me this kind of augmentation could actually help level society's playing field. In fact, I like to think of this as a kind of open API for all that's best about humanity, and again, available to everyone. In fact, disabilities, we know it, could be vanquished. And whether you think that sounds realistic or even desirable, well, again, as Kevin Kelly puts it, for every person who says, over my dead body will I or my child be engineered, there will be someone else who says, bring on the mutants. It's going to happen at some point, whatever. It's critical, I'm saying, to this being open source, not hidden inside a paid-for walled garden. Jeremy. So, how would this actually work? In an open market, you can sell whatever you have to sell. The market rates are controlled by how much your personal data is worth, not a package deal that you have to accept because you're part of a network that only has a centrally controlled competition. Think, if you like, Groupon meets Pinterest, but just without a head office. You can act as a group to collectively trade your community in return for your carefully created insights into vintage wine or Swedish knitting patterns from the 1970s. I said that for Pella. I hope he enjoyed it. Rather than giving up this data simply in order to use the platform. You can sell your data, or you can sell your time and attention to advertising should you choose. You can use your health data to purchase services or access to products or media. You decide.
So the more I hear about this, the more I think that the vision that Mel's describing is like the pillars that we see down in the foyer at South by Southwest Convention Hall, just covered with a bunch of random posters that nobody can really make out. It's the messiest and most illogical world that I can imagine. And on that note, please don't forget to vote. We've got a few minutes left of voting, and it's very close. So we're on the final topic area, reality. Just a little area to cover in the last few minutes. And this is about the future of physicality, objects, video, how we interact with the world around us. So Mel has already described the reasonably assured future where all information and entertainment that ever exists in machine-readable form, and it's available to be squirted onto your device or retina as you desire. In this infinity of content, we'll rely on algorithmic selections packaged on the fly to create your preferences and to deliver your preferences. There's a totality of content, too much to ever consume. So the company, the man, will make some selections for you, give you program choices across a limited number of channels for you to adapt and personalise until they show you what you actually want. We may even subscribe to reality, as James Cascio suggests. When augmented lenses are as essential as a mobile phone, even non-virtual visual content becomes exchangeable. So what I think he's saying is that it's perfectly possible to imagine a future where what you see is the reality you've paid to see. You either pay for this at a subscription level, or it's fed to you on an advertising-led model, or using free-to-air augmentation. As an aside, in the converged future, using apps, it's very easy to protect revenue. This is the beauty of apps. They must be bought and subscribed to. And while that can be bypassed on the open web, in a closed environment, it can't. Users pay, and that's got to be good. They pay with data, they pay with credit for what they consume. Everyone is rewarded. And I think we mustn't forget that the reward is an important part of progress. But let's get back to the core choice here. It's open anarchy, endless unchoreographed, uncoordinated choice with your data, personal information flying back and forth between hundreds of different suppliers, or a simple, intelligent, always-on system that's simply an extension of you. So no, there's nothing more threatening than that. The world becomes a manageable place with understandable revenue models when we converge on singular solutions. We're not going to stop taking pictures or shooting video. That's just not going to happen. And you know, every hour on the hour, there's a photo walk through through Austin at the moment. We can just move this along by visually filtering in real time, either for captures or reality streaming, and auto-tune the details of life. Why should we bother with an unperfected experience, the sort of experience Mel's describing? We already do this in a slightly clunky way. We just need to make the filtering invisible and perfect.
And Joe, what are you doing?
Trying to get the action figure out of Hunter's ear.
To the cloud. Now I can take all these unruly shots and swap in some smiles. Finally, a photo I can share without ridicule. Windows gives me the family nature never could.
To the cloud with Windows Live to create and share anywhere.
See, this is already awesome, but my future is going to be my future is going to be better than that. If you can imagine such a thing.
I think you've just made my point for me. Everyone vote Mad Max.
So, finally, before you make up your mind, we should talk a little bit about open data, and let's think about what the idea of an open data future means. We should stop and consider who we trust with our data, and what do we mean by that? And a future where you entrust one company to manage, store, and release your authenticated data in tiny, anonymized, fraud-proof packages. That's what I'm proposing. The dangerous open world that Mel talks about is hugely hackable. It's an unsterile. You notice there's a lot of hygiene words. It's a dirty world that Mel's proposing. It's an unsterile environment for information, which is, and this information is incredibly valuable to you. It's all about your identity, lest we forget. Contemplate how many hundreds of organizations currently hold scattered fragments of data relating to your existence. Thousands of separate service providers and retailers, each with their own security, data structure, APIs, feeds, privacy policies, and moral code. Everything from health records to credit, to personal updates, to dating history. And you, us, the users, have no awareness of our own data history. It's like walking around with amnesia, and we're living in the data equivalent of Memento. This future, which we currently call augmented reality, smoothly becomes reality augmented. And in a converged world, it's more likely to be a simple, invisible surface to our experience and understanding of the world. Much in the same way as we hear or smell, we'll be fed data through incidental surface media around us, or by insight displays, corneal, contact glasses, or handheld. In a closed world, the world that I'm proposing, that content sits as part of a perfectly formatted encyclopedia of human knowledge, accessible through location, audio, search, or visual triggers. I'll walk down the street, and as I give a second glance, the computer will match a face, a colour, pattern, a show, and either store or retrieve information around that for me to access or not as I choose. It'd be my apps that tell me this, not the web, my data stored for me and used for me so that the world around me is always one step ahead of me. Vote now with your iPhone for the future you want. For the future you deserve.
I think you deserve a round of applause for that.
I don't want your applause, I want your vote.
This is a man who didn't know he was doing this talk until about a couple of hours ago, so he seriously deserves a round of applause. Okay, so that doesn't give him a get out of jail free card. Because frankly, for a very long time, this closed world you're describing, this perfect world, isn't actually going to be very perfect. It's going to be pretty barely effective design that won't really work. So things that so-called talk to each other will do so really badly. In fact, they probably don't even get on. The microwave keeps calling the fire brigade on the toaster. Single solutions just have inefficiencies. And the truth is, even I have to admit that it is hard to imagine a future of multi-device, interactive, streamed media without imagining a single provider and convergent technology. I do get that. But most people today have a mixture of technologies, and so it will be in future. What's more, on subjects like crowdsourced pattern recognition, humans are just better, particularly when we're allowed to get on and do it in our own space. And in the case of Zooniverse here, humans looking for planets around stars actually do beat computers. And finally, let's imagine a crowd of the future where open access to data transforms their experience. So imagine this crowd with their thousands of heads-up displays, mashing up data, streaming in from thousands of services, everything tailored to their interests, with a market built on popularity and referral. Everything you do is simply an eye gesture or a shake of the head. What does that look like? Imagine a football stadium watching a game, but also pulling up instant replays from multiple angles on contact lens displays, or even arm displays or handsets. You know, we can have an augmented reality future too in Mad Max. It's just that these people are physically connected, and yet also this is a world essentially dominated by the free exchange of ideas and information. These people are physically connected, and yet also virtually elsewhere, enjoying it with their friends all around the world. So, in my Wild West future, we marry our desire for technology with our desire to move backwards to simpler times. That's just the truth. In Jeremy's world, we've abandoned nature and our natural instincts to explore and be creative. I'm not sure I want a controlled, perfect environment. I can't be truly creative in it. It can still be a hyper-augmented reality, as I was saying. It's just one with true choice built in, rather than a narrow menu of options. I mean, just one last example. We were free to hack together the voting platform today with just open languages like JavaScript and libraries like jQuery. The hallmarks of an open approach are choice, creativity, and opportunity. Why wouldn't we all want to vote for the open land of the free?
Well, it's clear that people don't want to vote for the open land of the free because the voting is closed, and I'm afraid that convergence and fascistic simplicity have won by kind of 2.5 time votes to every one of yours. Disturbed by that, but it doesn't lie. It doesn't lie.
It's a sympathy vote.
So, Mel is going to wrap up in a second, and she's going to point out that, obviously, the choice is never, it's not a zero-sum game. It's never as black and white as the futures that we've painted out. But in the meantime, we're going to talk a little bit about where this leaves brands in this, and it's pretty simple, really. Whichever future we head towards, algorithms are going to continue to develop in the way that they are now. Google's Panda, Facebook's EdgeRank, both algorithms punish boring brands to death. And in all honesty, this is an absolutely great thing. They demand that brands have to be interesting to earn the right to be anywhere near you. It's a value equation or exchange. Other brands may deliberately help you step off the grid, find serendipity and explore. And some brands will take the role of editor, expert and opinion leader in the field. And take The Guardian in the UK, which has just released a new advertisement about its open journalism approach. We can have a look at that now.
We have to say this is a BBH client. Sorry, we saved no BBH stuff, but this we are very proud of this ad, and it does make the point. Stand up.
Let us in. It's a
ride. The third is
custody, so the spotlight is once again shone on the grey area of homeowners' rights to protect their property.
This isn't right. The three little pigs are the victims.
Blew down two houses. He got what he deserved.
But the pigs went too
far. You have every right to defend your property.
Keep your chinny chin chins up, fellas.
Boiling someone alive hardly constitutes reasonable force.
If someone tried to blow my house down, I'd do the same.
There's no way you could have blown down those houses. He had asthma.
We've had asthma. So what's the truth about the pigs' houses being blown down? Inside job.
There's no reason why those two houses should have collapsed. Not even a healthy wolf's huff and puff could bring them down.
The three little pigs have confessed to insurance fraud, framing the wolf in an attempt to cover their tracks. Their motive was financial, as they struggled to keep up with their mortgage repayments.
I can empathize with it.
You've lost everything.
See, you're all, like, open now, huh? So the good news is that whichever direction we go towards, there is still a role for brands. People want choice. They want difference. They want differentiation. From babies onwards, we seek out the novel and the different. We want to learn, and we want the new. And brands can offer this and offer this choice.
So where does this all leave us? Where us is society, the real one on planet Earth, not the one in Mad Max or indeed in Skynet. Well, truth is, the future just doesn't happen overnight. Things change famously in an irregular and messy fashion. Change is a crapshoot. As we're saying, however, perhaps we just need sometimes to see these extremes laid out before us to make sure society doesn't unwittingly head in the wrong direction. They're kind of like buffers. It's good to know where the buffers are, but you don't want to hit them. The reality is, as dramatic and exciting as going to see a dystopian film is, reality is MOR. It is much more middle of the road. When we're pushed into a corner, we tend to self-correct to somewhere in between. We actually push back on extremes. For example, anything to do with a singularity debate would pretty much be immediately in a position of antitrust, and likewise, anything approaching the anarchy of truly open, free market mayhem usually gets regulated back into line. What is true is that we have, as people, to change and adapt with what's been described as fluid intelligence. Going forward, with that amount of information being put in front of our eyes, arms, heads-up lenses, you name it, the ability to see patterns in data, to have that fluidity of intelligence, we believe will beat, at the end of the day, knowledge, when all that knowledge is right there at your fingertips. And finally, I guess the one reassurance we have is that, at the end of the day, mankind, we just kind of like to meddle, don't we? Big fans of XKCD. We just can't help ourselves. If anything's not quite right and it's gone too far, we have to argue and we have to intervene. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Thank you for also contributing and voting. We've got a few minutes for questions. We'd be asked to, if you have a question, if you could use the mic in the central aisle.
You referenced the Oyster card game.
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit? I just
I've heard of it. Chromorama. It's a game that exists on the uses the data from Oyster cards, which are cards with an RFID chip in, I believe, that touch in and out of the London Underground, so it monitors your movement around the travel system and adds a game layer, an experience layer on top of that. Guessing.
Come and find us afterwards. I'll get it for you.
Yep, we'll be looking it up under the table right now.
Don't know it off by heart. Sorry. Hi.
Rather middle of the road. And I would submit that
Yeah. Yeah, and arguably, when I say we self-correct, we go to war to sort that kind of stuff out. But you're absolutely right. There are moments in history. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I take your point. Thank you. Any more questions? Doesn't look like it. Okay. Thanks very much, guys.